With the environment in focus, I'm Tom Pelton. Over the long history of the Chesapeake Bay, those captivated by its beauty have often suffered from landscape amnesia. We love and want to preserve what we see today. The shimmering waves, the sailboats spinnakers full, the blue crabs scuttling in the shallows. We want to save all that. But we do not remember the bay our grandparents or great-grandparents knew. The vast reefs of oysters filtering and cleaning the water. The schools of American shad swarming up rivers in the spring. The sturgeon thick as living log jams. Because we never knew it, we do not miss it. And so, as a society, we are unwilling to invest the money and the political capital and make the changes necessary to bring it all back. Victor Kennedy, a biologist for 4 decades at the University of Maryland Center for Environmental Science, recently published a book about the phenomenon. It's called Shifting Baselines in the Chesapeake Bay, an Environmental History. Here's Kennedy.
There are anecdotes about oysters, like the story told by a Swiss visitor who came here, and he said that the oysters grew in such masses and reefs that your ship could bump up on them. He also said that they were huge compared with the ones he had in Europe. You had to cut them in two before he could eat them. And then this shell. I personally have at home a fossil shell that's probably about 1 foot long.
This was not some dinosaur species of oyster. It was the same eastern oyster in the Chesapeake today. But the new normal for us is a 3-inch oyster, because watermen scoop them out after only 3 or 4 years instead of letting them grow for 10 or 20 years. In part because of overfishing, only about 1% of the bay's historic oyster population remains. And with this loss of natural filtering capacity, the bay has suffered cascading problems that we now accept as normal, including murky waters, algae blooms, and lots of stinging jellyfish.
You've got more phytoplankton because the oysters are not filtering it, therefore more zooplankton because they had phytoplankton to feed on, therefore more sea nettles, these stinging jellyfish, because they had zooplankton to feed on.
There was a big political fight in Annapolis this spring over incremental legislation that protects 5 small oyster sanctuaries that watermen wanted to reopen to harvesting. Kennedy argues that we need to go much further if we ever want to bring back a shadow of the bay's potential. He says we need to expand oyster sanctuaries and ban power dredging for oysters. That is, the dragging of heavy rake-like devices from power boats that rip up the bay bottom.
You could certainly argue that power dredging is something that should not be allowed. The idea of being power dredging is too efficient. And so with limited number of oysters out there, you're able to catch more of them more easily than with the old-fashioned way of sailing or tonguing for collecting oysters.
We need to adjust not only our sense of normal on the bay, but also our expectations. Rising oyster and crab harvests are not necessarily a sign of a healthy bay. In fact, they are more often the exact opposite, an indication that we are repeating and compounding the overfishing and exploitation that are the original sins of the Chesapeake's history. With the environment in focus, I'm Tom Pelton of the Environmental Integrity Project, author of The Chesapeake in Focus. This program is sponsored by the Abel Foundation. The views expressed are solely my own.